sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex. Hey, you guys, I just wanted to drop in a quick message before we dive into the actual conversation. In this podcast episode, Patricia and I talk a little bit about talking to your kids about sex. And we made a comment about how good it would be to have a resource and put some resources up there. I may put a few in the notes, but I also plan to put up an actual page. And I have some resources to list on there. We would welcome some additional resources. Come to us via Facebook, via the website itself, where you can submit a question. Whatever works, Facebook Messenger. So if you've got something that was helpful for you to talk to your kids about sex, or it was helpful for you to get into the mindset of talking to your kids about sex, absolutely send in that resource. We would really value that. So I don't know if it's going to be up when this episode comes out, but the plan is to put something up very soon. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the episode.
So, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's weird because I'm kind of at a place where I'm not feeling totally back. How do I say this? I'm not feeling totally like back to normal. Like there's this weirdness in the air because we're, you know, we, when we're recording this, we're kind of in the midst of our isolation phase. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a place where I'm kind of like, you know, my life has kind of gone back to normal and busy. There's way too many opportunities to do things on the web. So now I'm back to feeling like, oh my gosh, there's Zumba classes and there's yoga classes and I could do this and I could do that. And there's meditation and I want to do it all. And where I could have used another week where there was nothing to do.
Wow.
So I have to reframe my brain because I am one of those people who I want to do everything. I want to learn everything. I have a really hard time saying this is the thing that I'm doing right now and that's okay.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's how I'm doing, but mostly very well.
Well, that's good. Staying busy it's a great coping mechanism.
Yeah, I'd like to stay. Honestly, a little less busy would be good and I think really, really healthy for me at this point. And that's kind of my next step is I'm looking to create some space for myself to think about marketing for both of the podcasts and for also just taking some time to go, you know, I want to sit and read this book mindfully and do a little more of that. And yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. I'm just, I've found that I'm eating too much and I'm sleeping too much. So And now I have to make myself get out of bed by noon.
Okay.
I'm usually up by 7, 8, 9 because I got a dog. So I have to let the dog out and feed the dog and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then the dog has to go out again later, you know, but it's just very easy for me to just snuggle back into bed under the covers and just kind of lay there, read the news, do it. So it's not really sleeping. I'm just like in bed cause I'm comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then I lose motivation to do much of anything else.
Yeah. So, I don't lay in bed very long. And that's one of those things that I want to kind of do more of, like just
relax into it.
Yeah. And I, you know, and just allow myself to be like, I don't have to get up today. There's no big deal. But I know that I kind of feel like I lose so much time when I do that. And I've been sleeping a little bit better as I went through a period of just horrific sleeping, but I'm also going to bed at ridiculous times of the night. So I'm actually sleeping through those times of the night. But yeah, that's interesting.
So I've been getting up and taking walks because my driveway is now the warm weather last week melted enough of the snow that I can do the full circle around my driveway again. So
and how without far is
having
that for you?
Without having to climb an iceberg. My driveway itself is a half mile driveway, but the circle part where we like drive in and drive out is probably a sixth of a mile to do one lap.
Oh, okay.
So I walk it about 12 times and I drag my dog with me. And by the end, he's done. He's like, enough, mom. And he's with his head down low and he's just like, really again? But every time we go around, he gets a treat. So,
oh wow, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's why he follows me. Uh-huh. There's no other reason. Otherwise, he'd just plunk himself down somewhere, I'm sure. Oh. But yeah, we all have different ways of handling different things. I'm listening to the Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, I haven't read that for a long time.
Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Oh boy. Let me just say, oh boy, I've been taking notes frantically, just like, oh my gosh, it's so crazy. But
it is
really
an
good
interesting book. It is an interesting book. I would be fun to read that again. Yeah, I read that a long time ago and I own the movie and I've read the book a time. And I think there's like a companion book or a second book, I can't remember, that I felt like I...
Okay. The Tenth Sign is, I think, is what it's called. Okay. But I thought the Tenth Sign was supposed to be in the first book, the 1 to 10. But I don't know. I think maybe the 10th one is left off for you to figure out for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I don't know how it ends because I've never read it before. But we'll see. Anyway, this is so. There's been just lots of talk, lots of thinking, lots of stuff.
Yeah. But it's good. I mean, it's good. Like, we're in this weird time. It feels like a time when we have a little more time to be like thinking about thinking, yeah. Allowing ourselves to think, allowing things to come in, allowing processing time when we're not so, you know, I mean, as much as I feel like I'm kind of just as busy, but it's a slower paced busy, right? Yeah. Or, you know, I can be a little more relaxed and on that and not feel like I gotta push. And, you know, I can kind of create a little more space. So I'm appreciating that.
That's what it's all about, is creating the space for growth. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes a broken leg. Sometimes it takes a pandemic and, you know, just sometimes you're disciplined enough to do it yourself. And sometimes you have to be godsmacked. I don't know. you know, it's just like, we busy ourselves with so many distractions as a culture, as a society.
Well, I was just doing an interview for my other podcast with a judge earlier this week about kind of finding our new, grounding ourselves in this new normal. And he was talking about, you know, busy, that's the badge of honor, right? It's, mm-hmm. If we're busy, we're doing. And I know that I have sort of bought into that. I don't feel like I just keep myself busy. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing that.
But if you're not busy, you don't feel like you're accomplishing.
Right. And that is true. I'm not, well, there's this huge list of things to do. Why am I not doing that? You know? Right. So yeah, giving myself a break feels like there has to be so much purpose to the break, which I kind of am okay with, but sometimes it's like, oh, for God's sakes, just, you know, chill out and go lay in the woods for a while or something.
Go for a hike.
Well, and I've been reading a few thoughtful books. I've had a lot of incoming stuff, Lynn, since you're talking about books. Mm. I started reading Emily Nagoski's book called Burnout.
Oh, I haven't read that yet.
Oh, it's kind of directed towards women, mm-hmm. and it's written with her twin sister, Amelia, and it's already I'm not very far in, and it's an amazing book, and they're trying to make this not your typical de-stress book. It's like, okay, this is real people. Why is this real and what do we do about it?
Yeah.
So it's so far it's really good. And I'm also reading Body Keeps the Score. So
nice.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, I have actually four books going. So
that's my gig too.
I hate when I do that. I'm usually a one book girl.
Really?
Yeah, I do one book, I read it to the end, and I pick up my next one. But I've got four of them going right now. So I really should be, Celestine Prophecy, I'm listening to. So that makes me sit and I have to listen in order to grasp what's being said. And that's allows me to take notes. When I read, I don't read books that are just like fictional books. I read books that are, you know, self-improvement, empowerment, whatever. And I take notes when I read, or I highlight, or I make notes in the margins or whatever. Totally.
Hang on.
Totally defile the book. You know, from beginning to end. So the fact that I have four books going is not great for my intentionality. You know, like you were saying, being mindful, mindfully reading what I'm reading, because I feel like I'm all over the place. But
yeah, that's, I can identify with that feeling as well. And there's so many things to listen to things on right now too. So there's always something I can be listening to. And then sometimes I just have to go, you know what? Right now is not a time for taking in. Right now is a time for listening to music and enjoying the music and just being with that and de-stressing. And that's one of the things that the book by Emily Nagoski that I'm reading is kind of one of the things to talk about completing your stress cycle. And part of the completing the stress cycle is to deal with not just the stress, you know, the thing that's causing the stress, but the effects of the stress on your body. And if you can deal with that, then you can deal with the thing that's causing stress. And some of that is the whole, what is that for you? And for me, that is listening to music. So that's a huge
thing. Good to know. Good to know about yourself. Huh?
It is. And it's also good to have permission to do that. Like I sometimes don't make time for that in my world because, well, I've got all these other things to do and that feels like a happy privilege. And I'm sure I got that a little bit from my mom who that was my lifeline as a child, was to go in my room, crank up the music and be there. And, you know, and that was kind of her thing too. But she didn't necessarily do it as solo as I did. Sometimes when she would get annoyed with me, that was her complaint. Well, she's just in her room listening to records and listening to music. And so it was like, oh, okay. So maybe that's not always okay. Right. So then I kind of took that in as that is an extracurricular fun activity when actually I think it's a survival piece for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, actually, like escapism, where people go to escape in their mind.
Ooh, yeah.
I think escapism is a defense mechanism. It's also just a total overall coping mechanism. It's also part of fight or flight, you know. Where do you go when you need to escape? Where does your mind go? This is a much deeper conversation than I thought we were going to be having today, but whatever. We'll get around to sex at some point. Sex can be escapism.
That's very true.
There's just different things that, different ways that we feed our mind, and it's all about the intention behind it. Or like some people binge watch Netflix or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've been caught up in doing some of that as well. Some people read books. Some people run. Some people, you know, everybody's got their thing. Everybody's got their thing that they do.
Right. But the question is it balanced? Why? And I think your point, you said the words, what is your intention behind it? I think there's a lot of times when people are using it as the true escapism, there is no, they don't, it's not a mindful intention. Mm-hmm. It is just a thing that's happening to take you away from the crap you don't want to deal with or whatever it is that you don't want to face or be in your own mind, in your own space. And so all of those things can be good and fine.
Beautiful distractions.
Right. But are they being overused?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you were talking about using sex as a distraction. I'm curious to know during this time, when people are locked in their houses, how many are doing that as a survival mechanism in their relationship? I had a person that I knew, her and her husband, they had moved both away from their families, for his job. And they, I think, were in the very early stages of discovering they were not a good fit couple. And so when they were bored, they had sex. Like that was just the thing they did. So yeah. They had sex all the time. But it wasn't really...
It was just masking.
Yeah, I think boredom. That's what it truly was. It was masking boredom. As we don't know what else to do with each other. We don't know how to talk to each other. We don't like the same things.
What they were good at. Mm-hmm. When they felt were the only place where they felt satisfied.
Right. And they were young and it sounded good. Also, mm-hmm. Right? Also another little badge of honor. We're having a lot of sex. But in the end, probably wasn't the most fulfilling sex for either of them, but it kept them busy and able to function. So, yeah.
So as a stress relief, you know, if you're keeping busy by having sex and it's a stress relief, mm-hmm. How can that be positive and how can that be negative?
I think it can be positive, again, if you're mindful, if you're not just sort of coming together, throwing your bodies together, having sex.
Each other.
And then, yeah, and it's not really about the each other, right? I mean, I mean, sometimes sex is just sex, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm just saying, is that the commonality? Is it the, well, we're bored here, let's just both get off because we have nothing else to do?
It's a recreational exercise activity.
True.
It really is all about the intentions, and it's about the connection and the partners as well.
Right. I think you can use that to also really connect, really build, really take things, you know, again, it depends on what each person likes sexually. Right. Mm-hmm. But boy, you can, if you're having a lot of sex because you're bored, you can use that time also to just really connect and learn about each other and grow your connection and grow your sex with each other. I mean, I think there's opportunities for that too.
Here's a question. Here's what this podcast is about. Are you ready?
Sure.
Why do we have this small box that we put sex into? Why do we limit sex to just the act of sex?
Mm-hmm.
Versus the vitality and life and nature and excitement and pleasure and everything that's accompanied with it, and where it's found all through nature. It's found in the outlets in our house, the male and female parts. It's found in when you're baking a cake and you put the ingredients together and then they rise and they fall like a souffle, or I don't know, the release, the tension and release. I just don't understand why we keep sex so small.
It's interesting. As you're saying all of this, there's multiple things that are going through my mind.
Of course there are. And that's why I say them.
Huh. Which is so, so much fun. There is the, well, this is America. That's what we do in our culture.
There is,
I know, I agree. There is the Esther Perel, who is really talking about, you know, one orgasm, the next orgasm begins when one ends. So it is about our life. It's about our connection. It's about how we interact with each other. And I think that there are lenses that we're learning to look through. I mean, I obviously fall back into not that, right? But I can see the bigger picture and be put into those lenses. And in the nature piece, I think it's kind of a weird, it's not weird. That's not the word I'm looking for. I think in the nature piece, as you're putting like all of those things together, my question is sex what that all fits under, or is there a bigger umbrella? And if we would allow sex to be part of that umbrella and connect with all of those things, that we can make analogies, and is sex the core piece of it, or is it one more facet that we should just be including and acknowledging to just level the playing field and let sex just be this thing that is, that we can talk about, that we can communicate about, that we can see in things or compare it to, but it's a part of that big picture as well, and it's just an equal part.
Hmm. I appreciate all of those comments, but but it's almost like asking what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I don't know, convince me, Judy, that sex is not woven through our lives as a vital piece of our existence. And nature's existence, the idea of pollination, the idea of the life and death cycle, the idea of population control, the idea of everything. I mean, like convince me.
So I don't even know if I can convince you. I don't even know that I have a goal to convince you, but I do think that maybe it is the broader definition of sex that we don't allow.
Change it from the word sex to the word connection.
It is in everything. I mean,
and
my
is,
God.
Is not connection ultimately, I mean, can you not connect with somebody at a place where you are sharing energy, space, you know, intimacy without having to actually have physical sex. And yet it could be so, you can be so connected that there is definitely an energy present.
Oh God. Yes. So connect and so powerful. And sometimes those connections can be more powerful than sexual connections, right? I mean, yeah. they can be so, you know, how, oh God, I was just listening to, so conversations around people being isolated and, you know, how do we date and, you know, the jokes that are both jokes, but need to be heard of the whole, you know, this is a time for writing letters. This is time for connecting. You know, yes, we can totally do Zoom and all of those things. And those are great, but it's a great opportunity to go back to doing that or open that up or think about those things. Cause I think the connection in writing get lost. I hear that from many people, you know, when they're on the dating apps. I'm like, oh my God, we can't have more than two sentence conversations. I want to date somebody who can have more than a two sentence conversation. I understand that might not be your way to communicate, but can we try to communicate a little bit more? And thinking of Patton Oswalt, who they had their first, I think it was 3 months. I think they had their connection, him and his current wife. They fell in love through like email. Wow. They wrote each other all the time, and they have, I don't remember now how long they have been together. But they, you know, he has talked about what a strong relationship and he loved, you know, I mean, he would talk about how much he loved his first wife who died, and he's like, oh my God, I didn't even know this strength was possible. Right. So I think that I think of my dating relationships in the past, the ones that started out, and had a connection. And I know not everybody connects through writing, but I do think it's a beautiful skill to have, that those things are, they are really powerful. I mean, one of my best, you know, somebody that I consider a very good friend. We don't talk very much. We have more lately since in the last, you know, 6 months or so. But we can go for a year or two and not speak to each other and just hop on the phone and be right back. And right. He knows me so deeply because we had so many intensive letter conversations. And then that led to phone conversations and the combination of the two. And I wouldn't trade that for the world, nor would we know each other, appreciate each other without that, you know?
Right.
And I think sometimes that gets missed. And you can also do that in the same room with conversations with people. You know, I think of people that I've had really intensive connections with that have not been sexual for one, you know, or it wasn't just even an option. Right.
Right.
But yeah, that is serious power. It's really power. It's powerful. It's powerful in our bodies. It can be as, you know, chemical inducing as good sex can.
Yep.
You know? So yeah, I think you're right. It's the connection. What form does that take? And what do we thrive on? You know?
Yeah. And I just identifying it kind of like what you were saying was to normalize the idea that sexuality is just part of our existence and it's a vital part of our existence. So to just say that it is what it is and acknowledge the fact that it, you know, here, I'll use an example. Going out, say you are a runner and you go out and you get that runner's high. They say that once you break a certain point, you don't feel your body anymore and it's euphoric and you could just run forever. Not literally, but whatever. you know, that's how like marathon runners and stuff like that do it. That's how Forrest Gump did it, you know, whatever. So you run until you are to the point where your mind just kind of overtakes your body. And wouldn't it be nice to acknowledge the fact that what you're really wanting is that connection with your mind and your body?
Mm-hmm.
That can be that euphoric.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, I think we're all looking for that, but we don't know how to either acknowledge it, or we don't know how to find it, or we don't want to have the patience for it. And I think it's, and I don't think everybody finds that. Like, right. No. I mean, I think you find moments of it. I mean, think of how many people I've clicked with that we didn't click with, or we didn't, that I connected with, but we didn't. Wrong time, wrong place, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or just not that part of the, you know, say the sexual connection wasn't there, but the sexual energy was still there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's tension, the tension or.
Yeah.
Or sparks or whatever. There's.
Yeah. But you're right. I think that's what we're looking for. And I don't even think we're a culture doesn't allow us to look for that. We're looking for, you know, the prince or whatever. I don't even know what our cultural narrative is right now exactly, but we don't, I don't think always get to experience those connections to know they're available and that that's what we're looking for.
Well, this is part of this whole quarantine period, if you ask me. And I'm going to say that it all kind of coincides with me listening to the Celestine Prophecy, you know, talking about the restlessness that we keep ourselves so busy with distraction and stuff that we can't quiet our minds enough to be restless inside, where we're asking ourselves the questions like, is this all there is to life? Am I happy? What makes me happy? Is happiness the goal? What fuels my body? What brings me pleasure? What, you know, all of these deep questions that are truly soul focused, not ego focused, which is what the book is talking about it being the me. The last few decades have all been about me, 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 me first, me wanting this, me wanting that, me being more comfortable, me being better than the Joneses, me proving I'm good enough for my parents, me being the best at this, or, you know, the first or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's all been about me, 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 me. So then you have this pandemic come across that takes me out of the picture. We are one of numbers. We are one of millions of people being affected. What are we right now? We are at home. We are, most of us are isolated in some way or quarantined or trying to do whatever that looks like to them. Mm-hmm. 'Cause not everybody is still doing what they're supposed to, but, you know, it really kind of has leveled a lot of the playing field. Mm-hmm. In a way where it's creating time and space for that restlessness to start coming up and making people really look at what is lacking, not coming from a place of, you know, that I don't have enough. Where's the next joy going to come from? Where's the next thrill going to come from? This is more of a deep-rooted question, like, you know, what is this all about? Is there a bigger picture to this? Mm-hmm. And that's where I just want to kind of tie in the whole idea of sexuality is part of your creation story. I mean, we were created from through sex.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make it religious, but it's just fact. It's scientific fact. We're here because an egg and sperm came together to, you know.
Right. Right. It's
fundamentally why we're here.
Right. And it gets forgotten. You know, I always think of how everybody has such a fear around discussing sex, sharing it with their kids, whatever, whatever. And it's like, you know, that is how we began. And I'm fine with age appropriate stuff. Like that's right. Fine. But it's the whole, why do we have to fear this? Why do we have to lie to our kids and tell them weird things? I'm so glad parents are not all, so many parents are getting so much better about that.
Yeah.
You know, my mother couldn't talk about sex to save her life. And some of the stuff she told me about how life begins, it's embarrassing for me to like even think about that she would say those words at the age that I was sometimes.
Yeah.
And I know it was just, she was incapable of it. She probably in all truth and reality, as much as my mother would give me crap for you, you don't think I know anything. You know, I've had 5 kids and blah, 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 blah. But then she would try to tell me something and it was so incredibly wrong that it was like, how can I take you seriously? And it's not fair, but it's kind of, you know, where would you're like, well, I'm sorry, mom, but that's just not how that happens. So, but it's this fear. It's this fear around it. And, you know, and if we could get, I mean, and again, I think we are kind of getting better. There's a huge fraction of people who are not, who are trying harder to stamp it down and no, that's not okay. And we don't put these things on television. Oh my God, I can't believe you told my kid there's a baby inside my tummy. What the heck? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, we have to, yeah. How can we make that better? How can we just make it a thing that is more so and learn how to talk about it in a way that people can, you know, that is age appropriate. And I think
we're
just more comfortable with it.
The internet is a huge tool/hurdle to come around when you're raising children. And, you know, so many kids have tablets and iPads and smartphones and stuff in such young ages that they come across imaging and stuff, even if they're not looking for it, it comes across. Yep. And I almost feel like the age of appropriateness for having a conversation around body parts and stuff has come way down because of the exposure piece. Like probably you wouldn't have that kind of conversation with a kid until maybe they were 7, 8, 9, 10 even, if we're talking 10, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'd say you probably have those conversations at 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
Maybe even earlier than that. I mean, start labeling. Well, we did a podcast before about age appropriateness and stuff about when is it appropriate to start talking about different things. But, you know, each child, as they're exposed and between the relationship they have with their parents, just like you said, every parent's going to be different the way they handle things. But the exposure is there. Like they're right. Going to get it. They're going to get their answer from somewhere. And we shouldn't just rely on them finding it on their own on the internet.
Well,
or at least give them an approved, like if you find something on the internet that you think is a good tool to discuss, you know, what happens during sex or whatever. I mean, maybe we should find a couple options and put them in the comments,
Maybe
some different versions or like from different viewpoints. So maybe a girl, maybe a guy, maybe, you know, some different things like that. Have them in the comment section, not necessarily that we approve them, but just that, you know, it's
your option.
Yeah. And then what if you promote it to your child as okay, like, hey, you know, I just realized you're getting to be, you're getting to be a big boy, big girl, whatever, as you're growing up here. This is something that I'd really like you to watch. And then let's talk about it. I mean, it kind of does the work for you. And then you just answer their questions. And some of the most innocent, fun questions come from children. I mean, because their brains don't work. They aren't, you know, they're not, they don't have bad intent at that age.
They're not all gummed up. They don't have the societal crap on them. They're just here's what I'm thinking right now.
So they might just like totally blow you away with some of their thought patterns or having some really incredible questions that you could have wonderful teachable moments with your kids around.
Yes.
And now is just a wonderful time. Everybody's kids are home.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go to school. And so why not have a sex ed class?
Right. And it's interesting when you, as you say that, because I'm thinking, oh my God, if my parents would have sat me down and said, watch this and let's talk about it, I would have run away from home.
Honest to goodness.
Oh God, it would have been the worst thing, scariest thing in the world to me.
Well,
yes.
It might have been scary as a kid, but would you have done it because your parents told you to?
Oh, I would have fought it all the way. I think truly it is the think about the relationship with you have that you have with your child or that your child has with you. And maybe you're the one to talk to them, you know, because some parents are absolutely the resource for their kid. Absolutely. And they're, I mean, it's a mutual thing, right? Yeah. Everybody's happy. And there are some times when, you know, some parents are just super uncomfortable. So they'll like have somebody else. Let that conversation
sister.
Happen with somebody else, an aunt or whatever, that the kid feels just more comfortable, which I think is great. I remember growing up, because I didn't talk to my parents about sex, I learned about pretty much everything from somebody else, from people I could try. I didn't have to live with these people if I said something stupid or something that they would recall that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, do you remember when we talked about kunyaza and in the Rwandan culture that when the girls get to be a certain age, they take a trip with their auntie mm-hmm. up into the mountain, and that's when they learn about, and it's something that all girls are taught to look forward to, that it's what's going to happen. There's no scariness about it because it's expected. And I just, you know, I think about like in public school when they'd separate the boys from the girls mm-hmm. and they sent home the permission slip. Mm-hmm. That was humiliating.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
And then, you know, if your parent had to have a talk with you first, like, well, whatever they're going to teach you, you know, if you have any questions about it, you come home and talk to me. Well, yeah, like, yeah, right. That would happen. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you're dictating, if you are in control of the classroom, or perhaps maybe you have the whole family sits down. Oh, no, this wouldn't have worked in my family. I'm thinking about the age of my kids. If I had had, say, my if my younger two were, say, 6 and 7, then my older two would have been teenagers. And they would have been snarking the whole time, or it would have
exactly.
turned into, yeah.
Yep.
So it
yep.
does have to be age appropriate for sure, because you don't want to be derailed or go off on some kind of tangent that's then not understandable by the children or the younger children, or they see it as some sort of tension that caused an argument or something between you and your, you know, your older kids. So,
well,
yeah, I can see.
I think there's a lot of like, as parents have kids and are raising them to kind of need to do their own work around sex before they have to talk to their kids, because what you put into them, you know, what you're feeling is what they're going to take on. And they might not take that exact thing on. I mean, God knows. I took a lot of my parents' stuff on, but in a little different way. And obviously right now I'm in a very different place than my parents were ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think about the fact that, yeah, if parents need to think about how they're going to do that and what they're going to bring to their kids' table. And I know, like, I was listening to a presentation about kids and sexuality and porn and all of that stuff, because it's so pervasive, it's so easy and things just pop up, right? To set the tone with your kids of not even dealing with sex exactly, uh-huh. but leave the doors open to say, hey, if you ever see something weird pop up on the internet, or you get, you know what, let's just talk about it and ask me. Cause you know, and I don't remember what the verbiage was around how to explain that without putting like weird fear into their kid, but to make it open. And then if the kid does get on a porn site, you don't accuse them of getting on the porn site. You don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that stuff does happen.
That's true.
So
because it makes it a reactionary, right? It makes
right.
it like a surprise or a reaction, and they feed off of your reaction. Even here's, you know, when it becomes time for, say, a young girl to need a bra, And you, and as a parent, you notice that, you know, that they're starting to develop or whatever. Mm-hmm. That is, that can be even an awkward time sometimes.
Well, it can set the tone.
Yeah.
Many women have talked about how that really screwed them up.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes you really very self-conscious, mm-hmm. and affects your posture. Everything it can, it's one of the most outward ways with girls starting to get breasts that it's, and boys starting to get, you know, woodies during school or where, whatever, at unopportune times, you know, mm-hmm. that's its nature. And this is kind of wheeling its way back to what I was saying is that this is all natural. It's all, everything stems from what, you know, where we came from, and that it's all part of the process.
But we make it hard.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think of, so thinking the whole nature thing, I had a lot of mixed messages. I remember going shopping for my quote unquote training bra. I hated the words training bra. Because I wanted to, like, I knew that my mom had to go with me, but I didn't really want her to because I was embarrassed and I was a very modest kid. Mm-hmm. And then I got one, and then my sisters kind of made fun of me because, like, oh, you don't really have anything to, you know, to yeah. fill that out. And it's like, what am I supposed to do about that? Like, you know, you don't have the words, you just feel shitty.
Yep.
As a kid. And then I remember thinking of weird mixed messages I got. So I remember my mom and my family always be modest, be a little lady, don't show your skin, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like don't show anything appropriate. Always have your legs crossed, all that stuff. I don't remember the thing that happened, like literally within the week before this thing that I'm about to tell you about happened, but it was such you know, that was kind of the be modest, be a little lady. We were at my grandpa's house and I had a sundress. The sundress is one of those dresses where it has the ties at the top that you tie the straps together.
Right.
And then it had like a little front that obviously would cover you. Mm-hmm. My sisters, as in my recollection, it was my sisters that did this. They tied it on. Mm-hmm. And I looked down and I realized that my nipples were hanging out.
Oh.
And I was like five. I mean, I was like probably somewhere between three and five when this happened, right? So got nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So I freaked out. And in my family, kind of when things went wrong, you were bad. Like that was the message that I got.
Right.
So I said, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know what words I use, but I basically said, this isn't okay. And I need to change this. And whoever was in the room at the time was like, oh my God, Judy, you don't have anything to show anyway. Now they may have been kidding.
Yeah.
Or trying to be funny. I was so confused because I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I just remember I didn't have words, but I absolutely remember being in tears because I'm like
embarrassed.
Okay. I'm embarrassed because my nipples were showing. I'm embarrassed because I don't have enough to show. I don't have enough. Like I knew I was wrong, right? My body was wrong. I didn't have boobs yet, right? My sisters were 8 plus years older than me. So they were all good to go. And I didn't. And so it was another way that I, again, was a child that I didn't want to be a child because being a child was still not good enough. Right. So it's just, but it's when I think about those mixed messages and those things that we get in the fun that we get made of us and then how we process that, that's shit that I'm, you know, I don't think I'm responding to that exact thing nowadays, but it certainly affected me as I got older because I wasn't sure how I was supposed to be. Am I supposed to?
Yeah.
Is it bad if I let my boobs hang out?
Well,
is it not? You know?
It's all part of the shame culture that we're raised with.
Right.
And it's not even necessarily around sex. It's often just the messages that we're not good enough, that we're never enough. Mm-hmm. Or that we're bad, or that we make bad choices, so we're not smart enough, or you know, we're not intelligent enough, or we're not pretty enough. And it's not just for women; it happens to men too. And I am so much more conscious of it now. You know, I'm a grandmother of three, and I just want to it's that zoom out thing that you're talking about where you can have a whole different perspective because they're not your children, yet you know that what you say and do so impacts everything that will that they will be as they get bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, even grandparents, I just remember, you know, visiting my grandparents on my mother's side, staunch Catholics at church every day. My grandfather was a deacon. The Monsignor would be at the house for pizza on Saturday nights after service. I mean, we had, and we all had to be proper. We all had to, you know, like you're saying, there were all the hoops to jump through, everything that you had to do to be good enough, to be good enough, to be good enough. Mm-hmm. Am I good enough to sit with my cousins at the table in the kitchen? I mean, like everything is about judging and leveling when you're growing up, because that is your moral compass, is comparison. Mm-hmm. As we grow, we just compare ourselves. When you didn't have boobs and you were being made fun of because you just had nipples and there was nothing to fill out your top, it's because you were looking at your sisters and you knew you were different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you knew that, you know, you didn't have what they had up top there, but you didn't have the understanding to know that it was coming.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I did or not, but I knew in the moment that once again, I wasn't good enough.
Not enough. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yep.
But nature, when we go back to nature, nature does its own thing, whether we're enough or we're not. Nature prevails. Nature still pushes through. Nature does what needs to happen. And we have cycles and we have, you know, like I said, the death and life cycle. We have our menstrual cycles. We have the seasons. We have, I mean, everything is cyclical. You know, it continues to move on, and nature just has a way of continuing to bring us back to nature. Even the virus that we're dealing with right now, it may have been man-made, but it's a biological issue because of the way germs transmit and the way that we get sick and the way that, you know, our lungs work or whatever else and how we're responding to them. Nature just has a way of doing what it's going to do. And just like the bees pollinate the flowers and, you know, the animals have sex in the spring so that their babies grow through the summer and they can hibernate in the winter or, mm-hmm. you know, and it's so fascinating to me that we question science so much and that we don't just let nature be and that we have to put ourselves into so much of shit. Mm-hmm. Why do we, our egos, you know, and how much man or woman affects nature versus the other way around?
Mm.
Yeah. I guess that's the perspective that I go at, as I've shifted my perspective. I look now at how nature is my origin versus me coming and dominating nature. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a completely different, I guess I'd be a naturalist.
Yeah, well, but you're right, though. I mean, I think that is an interesting question, or you know, it's an interesting perspective, and it's something that I think many people are shifting to a little bit more. It is that
the awareness the awareness around that.
Exactly. That we're not necessarily here to dominate nature, but we are part of nature. That this is,
right.
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's interesting.
Yeah. And so that just kind of, you know, the conversation with the kids and, you know, that's a great place to start, but you're right. The parents have to deal with it first. You know, as if you're feeling awkward about approaching your daughter about going to get a training bra or her first bra, make it an exciting thing. Oh, wow. You know, you're getting your first bra. It doesn't have to be a training bra.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, or why don't we get you some sports bras or something like that, you know, so that it doesn't make them feel like they're less than.
Right.
Or not enough. Words are so powerful. The words we say and the words we use are so powerful. It's crazy. how they stick, right?
Well, it is. I mean, yeah, think of how many things you remember clear as day. I mean, I can think of things that my mother said clear as day.
So many negative things.
So, yeah, and it is usually the negative things. It's those times when emotion hits us. Those are the times we really remember that get, you know, sewn into our memory so intensely. It is because of the emotion and the chemicals and all the stuff that comes and helps us remember this situation where, you know, years ago, those things were probably how to not get, you know, eaten by a tiger. And now they're how to just make it through third grade.
Yeah. But isn't it fascinating how those negative, when I think about, I listen to a lot of stuff on like manifesting, and they always say about, you know, really feel it, like really like deep down inside, you've got to feel like you're right there, you know, mm-hmm. feel it and get in tap with what that emotion feels like and how, you know, touch something, whatever. Why is it that we can't hang on to pleasant memories as easily as the negative ones? Like, why is it that we don't remember every time we've had an orgasm?
I think my theory.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of true for me, and it's something I'm trying to figure out about myself. But listening to many other people, the reason I have learned this about myself is because of how many other people I've heard talk about it, is that we don't allow ourselves to really experience joy. There's so yeah. much vulnerability in experiencing the joy and letting yourself. I mean, I can think of a few very great orgasms, but you know what? They were also tied to
emotion
and my ability to be vulnerable. I can, that's funny that you say that, because I'm like, yeah, I got a few that I can instantly recall because I got to fully participate in them and I got to fully be myself, and there was truth and honesty and vulnerability there. And
it's usually like your first time.
No.
You don't remember your first time?
No offense, first time. No.
Do you remember the first time though? Whether it was good or bad, do you remember?
Oh, I think my first sexual experience was good. Now I'm trying to remember my first actual orgasm with another person.
Yes, yeah. I'm just talking about like the actual sex.
Oh, period, like, as a kid? Like, I mean, as a first
your
orgasm?
Your first
child orgasms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's your worst sexual.
Yeah, can remember some of those too.
Yeah. And then maybe your very best, like the best ones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you're having sex all the time and you're having wonderful orgasms all the time.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, the mind you've got to draw on.
Yeah. Why aren't those positive orgasms washing mm-hmm. off or Xing out, you know, they say 10 positive words to negate one negative comment mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't that balance out? It doesn't.
It doesn't, but then it also struggle. Makes me want to go talk to a bunch of people about their orgasms right now. I want to have conversations with a bunch of people who have had even, I've loved to conversate with people who have had a bunch of sex in their relationship, who has been really good sex, people mm-hmm. who have had mediocre sex, but they've had a lot of it. And then people mm-hmm. who have had a lot of sex with a lot of other people, because I think,
there's value in every one of those perspectives, obviously.
Right. Right. Exactly. And then I want to talk to them about their best orgasm and their worst orgasm. And then how do those things fall into place? Like women who, you know, say women who have been married, who are maybe in their, I don't know, 50s, 60s, who have been
yeah,
with this
predictable
entire life or two partners and really had long-term relationships, to talk about their quality of orgasm and their memories around it. Oh, I think that would be just a fascinating conversation
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because yeah, because of that exact thing of what does this tell us when we think about our orgasms? I think your question is very valid. Why don't we remember our orgasms? Is it because, is there some bigger reason that we're not getting to, or is it truly the basic of, have you never had the vulnerable, joyous, can sink into an orgasm like nobody's business piece that has allowed it to burn into your memory? Like the, you know, I'm hoping, I hope I never forget.
You want my opinion?
I do.
My opinion is that the bliss of an excellent orgasm is where we're supposed to always be.
Ooh, that would be nice.
And therefore it's fleeting because we constantly allow ourselves to fall back into stuff that we don't need to. We're supposed to live in a constant state of bliss. We're supposed to be in that transcendent place where, you know, we have full love and full connection and full vulnerability and full joy all the time. And that's the happiness. That's not even happiness. Like, is it beyond happiness? You don't even feel happiness when you're there because it's a through and through feeling. It's not even, you feel happiness after in the thinking of it. In the moment, you're not thinking about how happy you are.
In the moment?
In the moment of having an orgasm.
That's true.
You're not really thinking about, oh my God, I'm so happy right now. Do that some more. No, that's not what you're saying. You might be feeling like connectivity again, the joy, the happiness around being with a partner, but that's not the feeling of an orgasm.
Yeah. No, I'm taking this all in and processing it in the because you look back on it, but in that moment, I don't know, I'm trying to figure that out. Like, I'm trying to think through what you're saying and say, can you have an orgasm, anything in your life, but an orgasm for sake of this discussion,
yeah,
that you really do know you are in the euphoric moment, that you really are. Like, I'm just trying to think through that. One of my euphoric moments.
You can be present in a euphoric moment,
but you're
not in the moment. It's outside of the moment. Oh, okay. This is like blowing my mind stuff. Okay. So when we talk about the seven levels of energy, when I've talked about them before, level one is the ego. That's where you're stuck on self. Level two is the fight. Level three is cope and settling. So as you go out from the center, it's less and less ego, more and more transcendence. Okay. So the fourth level of energy is service. The fifth level of energy is increased level of acceptance, releasing judgment, curiosity, humble confidence. The sixth layer of energy is creation. Blending away the illusion of individuality. So this is everybody wins. Sixth level of energy is joy. Okay. Seventh level of energy. This is the outermost selfless love energy that there is about manifesting no judgment, totally objective, total bliss, total energy, intense desire and enthusiasm for all experiences, and not being part of it, but being outside of it.
So that almost makes me, okay. So then going back to your statement of we're always meant to live in bliss.
Yeah. Seventh level energy.
Right. But that makes an interesting thing because the way to experience that bliss is to be outside that moment. Right.
Yeah.
And then my other question is, I'm processing through your statement of we're always meant to live there, because here's my thought about that. I like that idea. Can people do that? Or is it something you attain? Because I'm thinking of the people when we talk about proceeding through or going up the chain, right, to get to that seventh level. Do you have to go through the other things, right? So we're meant to attain that and be there, like if we can be there. But is it true that you need to experience the pain sometimes to experience the joy? Like I hear
absolutely
have talk about how much they've been able to learn to love by experience the massive amount of loss. You know, I think of the good relationships that I've had where I don't know if I would appreciate how I felt about that person if I hadn't had some of the shitty things happen to me. And I think I would still appreciate it, but I think there's a whole different appreciation to it. And there's also that feeling of, yeah, this is what I want. This, and how do we stay there? That we kind of need to not only go through some crap, but process the crap and the pain to get to this euphoria. I don't know. I was just listening to something this morning talking about how, and their focus in this particular discussion was particularly on women and our culture, and talking about how women are so encouraged to not feel their pain, to not allow, you know, it's something we just have to get through, let go, move on. And I do think that's true. Like, I think that there is a lot about that, that we're not encouraged always to process as a woman. You're just supposed to be happy, and thinking about kind of our think happy culture, which I think there's value and harm to. So it was just an interesting thing, because I was just listening to that about how, you know, no, you have to, we have to allow ourselves to have the pain, feel the pain, process the pain, go through it. And it's not a horrible thing. And it's not something that we just have to shove aside. So I'm trying to marry those two concepts, because I think they can kind of both live together, but it's a complex relationship.
Well, absolutely. Because pain and pleasure are go hand in hand. There's a fine line between pain and pleasure. Mm-hmm. Very fine line. Very fine line between love and hate. As you know, there's, and that in itself, that fine line, the fine line is like, that's like the finding the walking the line is what life is really kind all of about. All about. Yeah. Just dipping a toe into one side or the other, and boy, you can go on a whole detour of scenarios and stuff. Now, you know, like what I was talking about with like the orgasmic bliss, I understand that you can't live there all the time. And when I talk about the seven levels of energy, once, you know, you go up the chain, and once you kind of unlock, like in a video game, like you unlock the next level, you can then, you have a better understanding of the steps below you, and you're able to move up and down all seven levels of energy at your convenience. You can choose to take time out and go to self, down to one, and be a victim for a while. You choose to do that versus being a victim of self. There's a difference, you see? So choosing to stay in that blissful state is a more conscious effort. It's like, you know, sitting outside and looking at the trees and the birds and the, you know, the ants and all that kind of stuff, and just losing yourself for an hour or whatever. That's bliss. That's just like, you know, when you lose all sense of space and time, that's bliss. And it's okay. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. And we have more time right now to be blissful.
Right.
Than we've had, probably most of us have had in a really long time.
Yeah.
Or just appreciate nature and appreciate the things around us and take in things that can be joyfully absorbed without it having to be about you or include you. To just be watching and taking things in and internalizing through your senses, just allowing yourself the sense of touch and taste and hearing and sight and your imagination. Just, you know how I get all excited about that kind of stuff. You know, I'm the senses, you know, plug your senses in, be blissful about things, choose bliss, choose it, choose to be orgasmic about things. Take a bite of food and be like, oh my God, that was so good. That's a foodgasm, you know? Choose it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting, this the food thing that you're saying. You know, one of my favorite things is my first cup of tea in the morning. I love my gunpowder green tea.
Yeah.
It just makes me happy. It is the thing that is, especially when it's that perfect temperature, it's that the world is all okay. In this moment, like I'm okay. And I think I've really come to realize how much I value that moment and that taking that moment
for yourself
to appreciate. Yeah. And to appreciate the sip and the taste and the, I am so present right now with this moment, with this taste, with my little cup and my hands being warmed by my little cup. And it's just like,
the teagasm.
It's a teagasm.
Good job. Now you just, you know, you just fill your day with those, have pet gasms, you know, do just like, just enjoy fucking life. That's, I mean, that's, we're supposed to be enjoying this human experience that we're here. Yes, there is pain. Yes, there are lessons. Yes. But a lot of that stuff is self-imposed.
Well, and I think of this time, like you're saying, we have this time and whether, you know, there are some people who, you know, your life has shifted. Now you've got kids 24/7. So your life is shaped differently. And so you're busy differently and it's maybe very full, but we all, most everybody right now is shifted in one way or another. And if you can take that extra time to inhale and breathe and take, just move a little slower. I mean, like I say, I think for me, sometimes that's it. It's moving a little bit slower within my space and the things that I'm doing. And, you know, everything is a little off. I went and took a walk the other day and everything about my neighborhood is a little bit off. Downtown is a little bit off. So I'm noticing it, right? Like it's just, everything's a little left of center. And it's a great time to just think and open your mind to that. Mm-hmm. And I think like you're saying, to take those moments of appreciation and joy and to allow yourself. Because I think, I know for me, the first week of this, I was loving it. I was feeling horribly guilty. And like, people are freaking dying. And I am this privileged little person sitting in my little house and I'm okay. And what a jerk. And on the other hand, I'm like, had to get over that. And I still have compassion and I still know that there are realities in this world going on right now I cannot even comprehend. And I am not taking that away from anybody. And I know these healthcare workers who are sleeping in their vehicles in you know, in various places to not infect their family. Absolutely, my heart goes out to them. And this is, I want them to have some time like this afterwards, but they get to rest, you know?
Yeah.
But to say, and this is to myself of the whole, but you know what? I've been gifted this time and I need to figure out how to be okay with it and just say, you know what? This is one of those things where I get to do good for myself in this space that I'm in because my world isn't topsy-turvy. And if for some reason the universe is ordered in such a way that I get to have that, let's allow that to happen. And I'm struggling with that exact thing, but that's what I'm trying to get myself to a place of because I am the type of person who kind of in some ways never stops working. Like I need to always have a purpose to what I'm doing on some level. And I'm not saying that that's a great way to exist on the planet, but it's my sort of reality that I'm trying to work with right now and be okay with the going, you know what? I get gifted some time and I need to figure out how to use it to take care of me.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an old saying, and it's usually said in prisons, ironically. And that is, you know, you do the time or the time does you. Mm-hmm. What's it going to be? Are you going to choose wisely to make the most of this? Or is it going to be a life sentence? Is it going to just be a drudge? Is it going to be painful? Is it going to be, you know, just depressing and hard every single day? Are you fighting against it or are you going with the flow of it? You know, that the flow versus the resistance, you know, just take what's being given as a gift. I was talking to my husband about the idea that when everybody gets done this, the people that are going to need vacations are the essential people.
Yes.
And people that have this time off, even if we're working from home, we should not prioritize ourselves. We should make sure that the essential people are getting vacation time and stuff before us.
Yeah. Yeah. As people go back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Because it's got to be a mental mind fuck for some of those people.
Yeah.
You know, oh, can you imagine? I mean, and I'm even talking about like the sanitation workers or, you know, the people, the retail supply. I mean, the supply chain is so crazy busy right now. Mm-hmm. You know, with the stores that are open and trying to stay stocked and keeping things clean and safe and who's in, who's out, who's sick, who's not, you know, who's got a sniffle, whatever. And it's got to be just totally stressful.
Every moment, You're thinking, how have I washed my hands? How have I touched something? How, I mean, we, you know, I've heard people complain about going to the grocery store and the amount of work it is to think through these things. And I'm like, yeah. And you just went to the grocery store.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you're not like the healthcare worker who's dealing with COVID people or people who might be that they're trying to stay healthy themselves, or the person at the grocery store, the sanitation worker who's trying to make sure they have their gloves on or that people don't come too close. Like, there's always this awareness. That is a mind drain.
Yes.
It is a mind drain. And so they're not just out there stocking shelves and helping customers. They are aware. And I just, a friend of mine went to a couple stores to do her, like, hopefully, she's like, hopefully my month of shopping.
Yeah.
And she said, it was horrible. She's like, people are not minding the 6-foot rule. They're not, you know, they're not staying, letting people get
by. Was that
by.
Down in the cities?
No, it was here.
Really?
Yes. And so, yeah, she said, it's amazing how many people are just not paying attention, and stores are making rules, one cart, one person per cart. Yeah. So you can't bring your kids in. I just was hearing somebody else was at one of the drug stores, and they said there were a bunch of kids just running around the store that the parents weren't minding. And, you know, and that stuff, it's so, that's the workers have to deal with. That is where they become at risk and essential, because they have to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, I went to Walmart yesterday for my month of shopping, and my natural inclination is always to be helpful, right? Mm-hmm. So I park out of the parking lot, and I see a cart, and I went to grab the cart to bring the cart in, because I'm like, somebody left it out here, I can bring it in. You know, I usually grab a cart on my way into the store. And my husband flipped the F out. He's like, you don't know who touched that. And I'm like, how's it going to get clean if somebody doesn't take it inside and clean it? I'm like, I can take it in and I can use a hand sanitizer and I can wipe it down. I can wipe my hands. I can go wash my hands. I mean, but how's the cart going to get back in the store so somebody can use it, for God's sake? You know, and then we're in the Walmart, and everybody, it was very strange. It reminded me of The Handmaid's Tale when the women go to the market and everybody's only allowed to be in their pairs, and you're not even, like, you know, couples or together, but you're winding around, and if you come around the corner and there's another cart, it's like wide berth. You know, people out here, people are taking it very seriously, and even to go in or out of doors, people are halting. Like, you can see people watching you get out of your car to time themselves so they will not be going through the door at the same time as you. Everybody's very, very conscientious of it here right now, from what I could see. We went to the pharmacy because we had to pick up a couple of prescriptions, and my husband's like, we're not going in. I don't want to be around anybody that's sick.
Right. Okay. And at the pharmacy, that's a place where
people would be, right?
So, yeah.
You know, making the choices and stuff. But how do you find blissful moments in even that? How do you support people who are working? Like, I made sure to tell everybody that was working, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your selflessness. I don't know if you have a choice to be here or not, but thank you for showing up for work today.
Right.
You know, because I can show love. I can still be in my blissful state and be showing joy to everybody and blending away, again, this level 6 energy, which is where I like to hang out, is blending away the illusion of individuality. Like, I am that person that's at the Walmart ringing up customers. I am the nurse that's at the ER, and I can feel that compassion. I can feel that pressure. I can feel that concern and pain and the sadness and the joy that they get to be there for people, you know, who are lonely or whatever. There's got to be moments. There's got to be some moments somewhere where we can lift people up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the thank yous and the appreciation and the awareness, the being aware of them and minding their space and your own space, those things matter.
Reaching out. If you know somebody that's on, you know, I heard somebody talking about it on Facebook that oftentimes they're referring to themselves as on the front line, like it's a war. Well, they're really not. They're the last line of defense.
Yeah,
They're the last line.
I saw something like that, and the point the person was making was that very same thing, and saying, "No, each individual person
is
we have responsibility to be on that front line."
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah, it is. It's that reminder that everybody plays a very important part, and we're
all connected, right?
Right.
It all goes back to our connection piece. Our conversations always come back around at some point. This was a long, deep conversation. It wasn't. But it was a good one. So
yeah. And we never actually got to the point we were going to make, which is kind of funny. We'll get to that next time.
Yeah, next time. Sounds good. Well, I feel like I just had a therapy session.
I know. It was good. It was good mutual therapy, I think.
Yeah. I hope somebody else got something out of it, too.
Okay, let's just say this. If I was listening to a podcast, this is a conversation I would enjoy listening to.
Me too. Yeah.
So,
I hope that our listeners are getting something out of these and realizing that it's not just about fun and games. A lot of times it's really a lot deeper stuff that we're trying to normalize just through the conversations, you know.
Right.
Sex matters, period, but it goes through everything. It's such a thread through our entire lives. It's crazy.
Well, it is. And we, again, in our culture have this protect. And again, we're acknowledging we're getting better, but in my time of growing up, and I still see it, there's the thread of protect. There's a thread that goes through, but there's that protection. We don't want to expose the kids to that. And there's appropriateness, but there's also this, sometimes that line I think is drawn too thick of what is not allowed through, and then some people are just whatever. We're living life. We'll deal with things as they come, and with thoughtfulness, thoughtful parenting, and thoughtful awareness of how do I process sexuality? How did I process? What was I taught as a kid? How did I process it? How did I feel? How can I do this differently so my kid has a better relationship with sex and sexuality than I do? And some people aren't interested in that. I mean, some people are very much the, you know, sex is bad, and we should make sure our children know that. So probably they're not listening to this podcast, but I would bet that there is somebody somewhere potentially listening who is in that situation, right? I mean, who has grown up with that, who maybe this somehow they stumble on this and they don't know there's another way, or oh my God, they might listen to this going, you know, if my mother heard this, I would be grounded, or I would be in so much trouble. But that's how we have to get out of this. That's how we have to hear other people's perspectives. There's a lot of people who, I know we had a Facebook comment on our page a long time ago where somebody was like, yeah, whatever, we all know we need to talk about sex. I don't remember what they said exactly, but they were kind of like, what's the big deal? You're not doing anything new, was kind of how I felt the comment was saying. Mm-hmm. And I very much had the thought of, and I think you responded to it in such a way of saying, that is so awesome that you are there, but that isn't everybody's reality. You know, there are many people who are stuck in a very different reality. There are people who are in marriages that wouldn't be able to have anything close to this conversation because they've had to smash stuff down so hard in their own body, in their own brain, that it's not allowed. And this is why we have, when women get divorced, or people, and it's not just women, people get divorced and all of a sudden they have this whole revelation. Your story, right? Your story is probably not as uncommon. It's just, it might not look, it doesn't look the same way. It maybe doesn't look as extreme. It wasn't as thoughtfully, okay, I'm divorced, I'm going to go woohoo and, you know, figure this whole thing out and do everything I can in a year. But it is the edging into taking little pieces and going, oh my God, I didn't even know this existed. I mean, I've known a few people who have gotten divorced, sometimes not even from their first partner. And all of a sudden they have this realization about what sex and sexuality is. And as 70-year-olds, they're such different people than they were at 50.
Yes.
And that's beautiful. And that, so it's never too late. And you never know when somebody is going to need, I mean, for the people who live in worlds and cultures and families where this is just not a big deal, you have a very different upbringing. You have a very different perspective on the world than many, many people do who, you know, who are 30 and 30 years old, who though saying the word penis is something that is just not okay for them.
Yeah. Yep.
Those people exist.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I just got an email from a man who's like 59, who said that he's always just felt like he was just who he was, you know, without that this was all that there was to life or whatever. And then he was open-minded enough to go to some tantric group, something or other. And he was blown away by the connection and the people and the energy.
Mm.
And it opened his mind to, you know, tantrika and to erotic massage and all kinds of stuff like that. It just, and the exercises around tantra and all that sort of jazz, it's just unraveled a whole new world for him. And he's like, at 59 years old, I thought my sexuality was over. It was normal.
Yeah,
everything was normal. And that I was, this just was all that there was to life. And here I've found this whole new world that is just, and I'm nowhere near completing, you know, my journey through this new world. And it's exciting and I'm alive and I'm enjoying it. And I see everything as sexual and, you know, I'm able to plug into things so much better and live my life more fully. And these are the kind of letters that just make my heart skip a beat. Like I get so happy and excited and sometimes even tearful when I read them, because it's incredible to me to have an impact on people that way.
Yeah, no kidding. That's super powerful stuff.
To just be able to introduce somebody to something different,
right?
That can change the whole perspective of their entire life.
Yeah.
Because they're open to sexuality. That's a different type of sexuality, or even just the energy of sex is fascinating. So I don't know. It's just so interesting. Everybody, like I said, everybody's got their own thing. I joke about this all the time with my husband, who is a Star Trek fan, that sex is the final frontier. I even did a little Star Trek intro bit, sex, the final frontier. And I went, do, you know, the music in the background. I recorded it. It was so goofy. I still have it. I should send it to you.
That's awesome.
It was goofy as hell.
It was
so funny, but I'll try and find it and send it to you so you can see it. You could put it up on the thing if you wanted to.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
There we go. There's our Patreon extra.
There we go.
Yeah. So before we, before we go, talk about.
Where are we? Where are we today?
Where are we today?
Well, I'm at home.
You know,
I'm
not
doing a whole lot right now. So
I got on a bus once and the bus driver had asked me, because of the amount of money I put in, this was important to the fare that I was being charged. I just don't remember what the deal was. And he's like, where are you going? And I'm like, home. Like, it didn't occur to me he needed a location to know what my fare was supposed to be.
That's funny.
Like, home. He's like, okay, and that would
be home. Yeah. Yeah. So with the coronavirus, there is not a whole lot going on with me right now. However, you can find my first book, Crossing the River, called Suffering, on our page, sexmatterspodcast.com. There's an affiliate link there. We get a little bit of a kickback for that. So if you're going to buy the book, feel free to buy it there, or Kindle. You know, it's available on Kindle too. I think the link is all through, right?
You have that should get you to everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then to reach me directly, you can go to my website, which is www.patriciaengelking.com. And that's all over our website as well. And you can find me on Facebook. Just, you know, drop me a line, DM me, email me, whatever. And
you can work with people remotely too.
Oh, right? Yes. I do video coaching all the time. Video coaching, phone calls, whatever. So
So yeah, it's
is a good thing because it adds, you know, when you're talking about sex a lot with people, there can be an intimacy, a connection that builds between people because you're talking about intimate things and there's a lot of trust and stuff that's there. So doing video chat kind of puts a layer of removal. It makes me more of a virtual person versus an actual person, like with feels and stuff, you know? So it just makes me and the person just a little more professional. I actually like the doing it this way better. I love to meet people in person, but virtual coaching is effective as well.
I have talked to many coaches who have said, you know, yes, there are the advantages of being in person, and yes, there some people really work better that way. But there's like, talking to one lady, she goes, I get so much more out of people sometimes over the phone coaching, even just the phone, and then Zoom. So yeah, there's, you know, it is a thing that can also be really powerful. And for some people, they can be just a lot more open that way. I mean, think about how weird it is. It is sometimes easier to talk to somebody.
Just a voice.
Right. Than your own family member.
But then I've also experienced where I meet somebody like at a Perkins or something and sit across from the table from them, and they'll, because I've taken the time and because I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, available for them and I'm holding space right there in front of them, that they're able to unload everything and we're able to make a lot of progress in a very short amount of time. So there's benefits to all different modalities, but during this crisis, it is not impossible to reach me or to get coaching. So, and for you,
my podcast is found at Wellness Ren. What is it? WellnessRenPodcast.com.
Whoa.
Sometimes one forgets their own brain. I have a lot of websites sitting in my head. So sometimes like, wait a minute, which one is that? So the Wellness Renaissance Podcast can be found at WellnessRenPodcast.com, and it can be certainly found on iTunes, and check wherever you are listening to podcasts and look for it there. And if you don't find it there, you are welcome to send us a message and I will see what I can do about making sure it is on whatever platform. And and that's a weekly podcast as well. We are talking a lot about Corona, but not necessarily directly. I just put out one that was about a hiking book. I think I mentioned this in one of the other with us. Yeah, that's, you know, it's a nice way to escape all of the things that we're doing right now. And coming up, I've got some people talking about liquor stores being open and how do we ground ourselves in this new world that we're living in. So
I'm going to be drinking tonight.
Are you?
I'm thankful they're open. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've declared today a wine day. Yeah.
That's funny. I actually had a glass of wine the other night. I don't really drink very often, and it's alone. It's just not exciting for me. Although it was a really good wine that I had. I did have a Kahlua and coffee. But it has to be like, I watched a really weird freaking movie on Wednesday through our movie theater. They did a virtual movie thing.
Yeah.
Love on a Leash. They even suggested getting a little drunk before you watch the movie. It's very helpful. I would assume also other mind altering drugs would be very helpful. it is the worst edited movie I've ever seen. And I'd love to talk to the director because I just want to know where she's coming from. Very strange movie. So know that you're in for that. So I had a glass of wine. In fact, probably a few extras as I was, I drank small glasses of wine, so I probably didn't have much more than a glass.
You didn't have my monster glasses, right?
Oh, I love your monster glasses. My friend, I gave those to as a gift. She loved them.
Yeah, good.
And then I had my Kahlua and coffee. I'm playing music bingo with a guy in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, who normally does it live and in person, but he managed to put it on the web. And it's just so much fun. So I've been playing that. And I treated myself to a coffee and Kahlua one night.
Nice.
So there's my alcohol history for any doctors or nurses when I mark out, I'd rarely drink there. You know what I've been doing for the last couple months.
Exciting stuff, Judy. Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good talk.
Yeah. Good talk. Have a great rest of your day. And hey, find some time for yourself, would you?
I'll Me or the general public?
Oh, I'm talking, well, everybody, but you in general, you in specific, I mean. Find some time for yourself, okay?
I will. I have a book that I've just started.
Take a day off or something.
Ooh. Well, I have been, like I say, I have been playing Music Bingo. So I have been getting my dance in my chair time in. and some dance in not my chair time too. But that has been one of my fun things that I have been really enjoying. So
awesome.
I have been taking, it's not like I'm like 100% worky. I'm just not, the book that I'm trying to read is going very slow and I need to make time for that too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sounds good.
All right.
I will
everybody later.
Chit chat with you the next time. Bye, everybody.